Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 28, 2015. Humanitarian workers reach South Sudanese cut off from help for months in Unity State.
There's a lot of need in these areas, really a lot of need. And we saw, you know, households who've lost, you know, they don't even have houses. We saw them as it was raining, they were just sitting under, you know, our tents. They don't have anywhere to sleep. It's really a very, very difficult situation.
And South Sudan Army makes plans to demilitarize Juba as stipulated in the peace agreement.
We started first with the Numuli Road, and then we went to Torit Road. We also locate the Bo Road, also locate the road to Lobonok, which is the Rajab. That is the eastern part of the river.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Aid agencies say it's once again possible to get humanitarian aid to areas that were cut off by the conflict in South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu traveled to Koch County in Unity State with the UN's World Food Programme to deliver the first humanitarian aid supplies in 4 months to thousands of people, some of whom have been eating water lilies to survive.
Hundreds of people wait in line at a distribution point in Koch, the main town in the Unity State County by the same name. They are waiting to register to receive food aid. No aid supplies have been distributed here since May, when the area was cut off from the outside world by a sharp uptick in fighting. But that began to change last month when President Kiir added his signature to the IGAD Plus brokered deal to end 20 months of fighting in South Sudan. U.S. Ambassador Molly Fee traveled with the WFP and UNICEF country representatives Joyce Luma and Jonathan Vetch, respectively, and reporters to Koch Town last Friday to mark the resumption of humanitarian deliveries to the county. Fee says the signing of the peace deal means,
for the first time, WFP and UNICEF and their implementing partners were able to go up and see the people in need, see what they require and begin to provide supplies to them.
The conflict in South Sudan left 4.6 million people severely food insecure and displaced more than 2 million. At least 10,000 people have registered to receive aid in Koch County. The WFP's Luma says the peace agreement that Mr. Kiir signed on August 26 and rebel leader Riek Machar signed 9 days before him finally gives aid agencies the chance to help desperate South Sudanese who have had to go for months without even the basics.
There's a lot of need in these areas, really a lot of need. And we saw, you know, households who've lost, you know, they don't even have houses. We saw them as it was raining, they were just sitting under, you know, tents. They don't have anywhere to sleep. It's really a very, very difficult situation.
Fee says the humanitarian situation in Koch is deplorable. She says government and opposition leaders must work to end the conflict once and for all so that aid can reach the people safely and without interruption.
The most important thing is a sustainable peace. With a sustainable peace, all things are possible. Without that, we will see South Sudan walk backwards, and no one wants that.
Koch changed hands several times between government and opposition forces since fighting broke out in South Sudan in December 2013. Roads, schools, health centers, and markets were destroyed as the two sides fought for control of the town. People's homes were burnt to the ground and their source of livelihood, their goats and cows were stolen or killed. Today, there is no farming activity in Koch. Marsa Nyachima is 20 years old and a mother of two. She was in one village in Koch County 21 months ago when fighting first broke out. She says since then her family has been living in very precarious conditions and surviving on whatever food it can find.
The life is very bad, so it is very bad in the food situation. So the thing that's going bad, gun shooting always, people are usually killing. Again, the water is usually very bad, and mosquito have and our food situation. We just only had the water lilies. We are getting our food in Water Riverside, water lilies and fish.
Nyachima says people in Koch have still not felt any positive impact from the signing of the peace deal.
I'm not happy for that all things because the school is closed and the hospital and a lot of things. That just makes me very sad. The thing that they should do more is hospital, to open the hospital and school education, and food should come. All I need them to come and bring for us food.
58-year-old Paul Riak says Koch suffered greatly during the conflict.
Life was very serious matter of it, sickness, disease, you didn't find any medicine. And you can't find nothing, food. Just many people die without food and medicine. Many died here. A lot of people miss their life for food.
He says things still have not improved in the county, and he wants the international community to ratchet up the pressure on the parties to the peace agreement so that they put their words into action. Onilenden says Riak will people in Koch begin to feel the benefits of peace. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
The U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan says tomorrow's high-level UN meeting on South Sudan is an opportunity for the leaders of South Sudan to prove to the international community that they are committed to peace. Ambassador Donald Booth also rejects the argument that the comprehensive peace agreement that ended Sudan's civil war paved way to South Sudan's latest conflict by failing to address ethnic divisions.
Let me first say that those who like to point out to the shortcomings of the CPA in 2005, I think sometimes forget that it ended a very brutal history of almost 50 years of warfare and set the people of South Sudan on a path to being able to determine their own future. So that's one thing. This agreement, one of the components of it is that it tasks the transitional government with the process of, through an inclusive process with the people of South Sudan, to draft a new constitution. And it's in that permanent constitution for South Sudan that South Sudanese have an opportunity to address the issues that divide them and unite them, and to figure out what the political structure will be that will best serve their ability to work together and live together and prosper together as a nation.
The international community is meeting the UN General Assembly, and all eyes are on South Sudan. Do you still feel the goodwill that has been there for this young nation is still existing?
Well, I think this meeting is actually a real challenge and an opportunity for the South Sudanese leaders and government and opposition alike to show the world that they are indeed committed to peace, committed to a better future for the people of South Sudan. I think if they successfully do that, they will find that there is still a reservoir of goodwill for South Sudan, and that they will find support for their efforts to implement this peace agreement.
And finally, any parting shot, if there's anything you want to say to the leaders, to the people of South Sudan, from the American perspective, what would that be?
Well, the key message will be to please keep in mind the people of South Sudan who have suffered so much in the past 2 years of this conflict, and to work for their welfare, for their benefit, and to indeed bring peace back to South Sudan so that it can move forward as the world's youngest nation, but move forward in development and peace with its neighbors and within itself.
That's Donald Booth, U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to me last week at the U.S. State Department in Washington. The Office of the Special Envoy provides funds for this program. The South Sudanese Army has surveyed and mapped 8 locations outside Juba town where government and rebel forces will be relocated when the capital is demilitarized. This is in line with the peace agreement signed by the leaders of the 2 warring parties last month to end the country's conflict. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Under the terms of the peace agreement, the military will be redeployed outside a radius of 25 kilometers from the center of Juba town. The resolution on security arrangements states that only presidential guards, a joint integrated police force, and forces guarding warehouses and other installations will remain in Juba. Major General Marial Chenuang heads the team surveying the areas where the new barracks will be established.
We have so far allocated about 8 areas, 4 at the east, 2 at the south and west of Juba town, and 2 locations north and northeast of the town.
Team member Dor Deng identified the 8 locations.
We will be making a report to the Deputy Chief of Staff for Operation, who will in turn give it to the Chief of Staff, and will be for the command to take action as to how they will make those places places that we can accommodate our soldiers.
Another location was marked along the Juba-Kajukeji road. Chanwang, who heads the Presidential Guard Brigade, says it is now up to the government to decide the next step, which he believes should be establishing more infrastructure such as roads, water and barracks for the soldiers. South Sudan's Land Act classifies land as public, community or private and states that the land is owned by the people and that the government regulates land use. Chanwang says the government will work with the communities to identify areas for military barracks.
We started first with the Numuli Road, and then we went to Torit Road. We also locate the Bo Road, also locate the road to Lobonok, which is the Rajab. That is the eastern part of the river. And then other four locations, we locate the one for Yei Road. We also went to Munduri Road, which is the one of Luri.
The troops are expected to be relocated from the capital beginning 30 days from the signing of the peace agreement and complete the process within 90 days of the signing. President Kiir signed the deal on August 26. It was signed a week earlier by Riek Machar. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
British Prime Minister David Cameron says Britain will send up to 300 troops to South Sudan to help with peacekeeping operations. Mr. Cameron's office says the British troops will do engineering work to strengthen infrastructure and provide combat training and advisory support. Mr. Cameron also announced that around 70 British troops will be deployed to Somalia. The British Premier describes the conflicts in Somalia and South Sudan as two of the most destabilizing in the world and says they are contributing to mass outward migration and facilitating the rise of terrorist groups. Britain contributes around $500 million a year to the UN $8.5 billion peacekeeping budget. It also contributes about $400 million to humanitarian response in South Sudan since December 2013, when the country erupted in conflict. Mr. Cameron made the announcement of the troops' deployment ahead of a meeting at the United Nations in New York about peacekeeping operations. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's vice president tells foreign investors that now is the time to invest in South Sudan. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you feel when a foreigner speaks to you in your language?
Well, I feel proud about my language, that at least even a foreigner is able to speak it. And I tend to feel funny about it that even a foreigner can speak my language. But I feel good. I feel positive about it.
Oh, when a foreigner speaks to me in my local language, I feel so joyful because this is a person who doesn't know my language. But maybe when she or he did a research about my language, she or he found the interests.
It sounds funny when a foreigner speaks to me in my language. When they speak it well, I get more intrigued and I want to find out how they learn the language.
It sounds funny sometimes. I laugh and the way the person will speak it. It will not be in a correct way, so I always laugh at that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Vice President, James Waniga, is calling for foreign business people to invest in South Sudan's oil and other minerals. speaking at an African Heads of State investment launch in New York City on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly last week. Iga said his country possesses many natural resources, including gold, which have yet to be extracted on a large scale.
South Sudan is the third largest oil producer in sub-Saharan Africa, with a current production potential of over 350,000 barrels per day. The country's extremely underdeveloped oil and gas industrial production beckons for massive capital injection with a guaranteed return on investment. There are over 20 minerals that have been for long mined by locals, including gold, copper, mercury, iron ore, and so on.
The presidents of Uganda and Kenya were among African leaders who attended the conference. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says investing in the region is an opportunity for African businessmen and women.
You open your market to us, so there is a trade arrangement called AGOA, African goods, tax-free. We have also got, talked, they didn't implement, but at least they talked about the same. Even Japan. So the point is that when you invest in any of these African countries, you do not only have the market of that individual country, you have the market of the region.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn said investing in Africa will boost the region's economy.
We need to work very closely together. I say this because, you know, it has been a century for the Asians, the last century. And now we are coming up as a continent to show that this is a century for Africa. Africa is rising. Africa has been growing as very fast in economic development, not only in economic development alone, but also in human development, which is suitable for investment.
IGA assured foreign investors that they are protected by South Sudan's laws.
Given the central role played by legislation in determining the attractiveness of any investment destination, the Republic of South Sudan has endeavored to enact laws that are geared towards establishing a conducive business environment. The South Sudan Investment Promotion Act, for example, 2009, and Companies Act, 2011, provide attractive incentives to foreign, regional, and local industries such as easy land acquisition, company registration, income or profit repatriation, and duty exemptions and anti-expropriation measures.
In December 2013, President Kiir declared the world's newest country open for business. At that time, during an investment conference which drew roughly 800 delegates from countries around the world, President Kiir said those who wait too long may miss the vast investment opportunities in South Sudan. That was just a few days before the fighting broke out in Juba. The conflict spread around the country and continued for 20 months, claiming at least 10,000 lives, affecting oil production and bringing the economy to its knees. While South Sudan's vice president was calling for a greater injection of outside capital in the country, a new report says development in Africa will suffer unless much greater investment is made to address climate change. The report says much of the effort to fight climate change should focus on small-scale farmers. VOA's Joe DiCapua has the story.
The report's been released by the Montpelier Panel, a group of European and African experts on agriculture, trade, development, and ecology. Dr. Camilla Tuhlman is co-chair and a senior fellow at the International Institute for Environment and Development.
What we see is already growing impacts in terms of rising temperatures, but also increasing variability in the rain that does fall within the farming system. And that variability makes the cropping system more vulnerable both to flood and to drought and to reduced yields.
She says while individual farmers are doing their best to adapt, a unified approach is needed.
There's a whole number of different initiatives underway to try and address the impact of climate change on African agriculture. There's a big movement around something called Climate Smart Agriculture that's brought together a number of the ZEEC agencies. But there's not really enough in the way of a concerted effort across the continent as a whole.
The report not only recommends building resilience to climate change, but also proposes paying farmers for their efforts to mitigate its effects. Toulmin says this includes planting trees on their farmland.
They're providing a public benefit for the world as a whole. So we're looking at various ways in which local funding can come down to farm level to support that growth in high-carbon soils, high-carbon landscapes.
A high-carbon landscape stores large amounts of carbon in forest biomass or peat and prevents carbon emissions from entering the atmosphere. The report, The Farms of Change, lists problems that it says could have catastrophic results on African development. These include rising temperatures causing crop damage and food losses.
We need to be encouraging ministers of agriculture all the way down to farm level to build farming systems that really celebrate diversity in terms of the crops grown, in terms of cropping and trees being combined together, so that you build a system that's much less vulnerable to the impact of rainfall variability and rising temperatures.
Other potential threats are increased child malnutrition, food price hikes, worsening poverty, and unplanned migration. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and members of the UN Security Council have strongly condemned yesterday's attack on peacekeepers in Darfur. One South African peacekeeper died in the attack near Melit in North Darfur, and four others were wounded. One of the wounded peacekeepers is in a serious condition. The peacekeepers are part of the hybrid UN and African Union operation in Darfur, known as UNAMID. They were escorting a logistic convoy when they were attacked. The assailants have not been identified. Ban and the Security Council are calling on Sudanese authorities to investigate the attack and bring the perpetrators to justice. Both Ban and Security Council have extended their condolence to the South African government, people, and the families of the deceased peacekeeper. They also wished a speedy and full recovery to four UNAMID peacekeepers wounded in the attack. Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, says his Forum for Democratic Change party will go alone heading into next year's presidential election unless Democratic Alliance changes its position. The alliance, a loose coalition of opposition parties, chose former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi as its candidate to challenge President Yoweri Museveni in 2016's vote.
On our part, as Forum for Democratic Change, we had three reservations regarding the candidature of the Honorable Amama Mbabazi. The first was that, indeed, having been in government for 30 years, we did not think that he had demonstrable commitment to the central tenets that we in the opposition have been driving to make sure that we have change in governance. Secondly, the Honorable Amama Mbabazi still stands alone where we see him. He has not created any kind of a structure framework within which he is functioning. We do not know who ARS is working with. We have been interrogating that question to know the framework within which he functions and how, therefore, he accounts for whatever he does to any other organization, to an organization or a system of or structure of other political actors, and that has remained a sticking issue. And thirdly, has been the question of commitment again or where he places the need for the electoral and political reforms.
Dr. Besigye, you were recently chosen by your party, the Forum for Democratic Change, for the 2016 election. Now, what happens now? Is the party going to contest alone, or are you still negotiating within the Democratic Alliance?
No, the negotiations with the Democratic Alliance regarding the presidential elections has closed, and we are preparing to go ahead with the campaigns. Of course, new situations could arise in politics, you never say never. And if there is a new rethinking within the opposition, we remain open-minded.
Does it make it difficult now to defeat President Museveni? Or do you still think the opposition at this time has a chance to defeat the president in 2016?
You see, Mr. Museveni has never won an election. He has always stolen the elections. It's not the popular support that is a problem in this country, popular support for the opposition, not at all. And that is why the question of focus on electoral reforms is critical, because Mr. Museveni has a comprehensive control of the electoral management system, and that makes it that much difficult for any candidate, whether it's one candidate, even if he had succeeded in getting a joint candidate, that candidate would still face the immense obstacles that lie on the path of an election. So we have a huge problem. It's not just a question of an ordinary election, and that is why my own campaign will be focusing on empowering citizens to reclaim their power, to defy the regime. Unless really we get some fundamental political and electoral reforms, our country remains on a very slippery ground.
That's Kizza Besigye, Uganda's main opposition leader, speaking with VOA's James Bertie earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is today's recap with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Humanitarian aid agencies in South Sudan say they can now reach areas that have been cut off for months by the fighting now that the peace deal has been signed. Thousands of South Sudanese have been desperate for aid, especially food. Hundreds lined up in Unity State's Coach Town, where no aid supplies have been distributed since May. U.S. Ambassador Molly Fee and aid agency heads traveled to Coach Town last Friday to mark the return of aid deliveries. The South Sudanese Army has surveyed and mapped 8 locations outside of Juba where government and rebel forces will be relocated as called for in the peace deal. The military will be redeployed outside a radius of some 25 kilometers from the center of Juba town. Only presidential guards, a joint integrated police force, and forces guarding warehouses and other installations will remain in Juba. And finally, Prime Minister David Cameron says Britain will dispatch some 300 troops to South Sudan for peacekeeping operations. The troops will perform engineering work to boost infrastructure and offer combat training. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Mama Soura by Freedom Boys.
Bitu Brothers, Nasty and Freedom Boys.
Mama Soura patale jua ala makalela binti bonwe arabayo ala makalela ana suta mazotani ana makalela Mama Soura patale jua.
We have been listening to the Freedom Boys with the song Mama Sora. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Abu Rasta, Asante, Biga, Biga, Sibu, Sambala.